you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Perreault will pick it up, left-handed shot, cross the line slowly, stick handling, still stick handling, shoots, scores! Jets win tonight in a shootout off the stick of Matthew Perreault. The four-game losing skid comes to an end. 4-3 the final here tonight for Winnipeg.
As Paulie Edmonds says, Thursday night the Jets fight back from two separate one-goal deficits, are able to tie the Florida Panthers in the third period. The game goes to the shootout where Matthew Perreault is the hero as the Jets are able to defeat the Florida Panthers on Thursday night. By a 4-3 margin of victory, ending the four-game losing streak and getting a little bit of good feeling back into the Winnipeg Jets locker room. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we welcome you to this three-hour edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on a bitterly cold Saturday morning. Wherever you may be, I hope you are warm, whether it's at home or in the car. Please drive safe and stay warm because it is a nasty cold one out there this 17th of December. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to Ezzy. I say good morning to Dave.
Yeah, good morning, guys. It was actually so cold that I had to pick all three of us up.
Yeah, just the body warmth we needed in the car to be able to get it here in time for the 9 o'clock show.
Yeah, and my car's a 2004, so
goes just takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Yeah, who would have thought that my car was actually going to be the one that came through for us? So,
well, Ezzy, you always come through for us. So I had no doubts about it.
Yeah, think so, Drew.
Yeah, you're number one in our hearts for a reason. And it's because you always come through for us. You got nothing there, Dave?
I got nothing.
I'm just going to leave it be?
I think you summed it up best, Drew.
Okay, well, there you go. Let's get to Thursday night in the Winnipeg Jets victory over the Florida Panthers. It's a win, but it's not what I would describe as a... It's a win. It's a necessary win. It's an important win. But it's not what I would necessarily describe as a good win, because they were not the better of the two teams in that contest on Thursday night. I was surprised at how, I would say, tentative they looked throughout the majority of the game. And they were able to keep battling back against a Florida Panthers team that is just as, if not more, fragile than this Winnipeg Jets team. But the win is where you get the good feelings, but I didn't think there was a ton about the performance itself that would leave you feeling terrific about this team going forward.
Yeah, sure, you could say that, right, Drew? But at the end of the day, they needed those 2 points, right? And I agree, you could argue that the Jets were lucky to beat the Florida Panthers a couple of nights ago, but, you know, we talked about it on the post-game show I did with Rick Ralph, and really, I mean, it was a dirty win. You heard Jets head coach Paul Maurice say it was a dirty win, but when you look at how the Jets played there in the second period, the Panthers put a lot of rubber on Connor Hellebuyck, and you got to give Connor Hellebuyck a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. He made 40-plus saves, and, you know, Connor Hellebuyck has struggled at times this year, and I thought that was one of his better games. He seems to do better when the opposing team has more shots on net. So, sure, Drew, I mean, there was a lot not to like. I mean, you don't like that Toby Enstrom took 3 penalties, and you don't like that your PK was not good in that game, and the PK continues to be a big problem. It's, I believe, 28th in the league right now. So you got to give the Jets credit, though, for finding a way to win. And again, you know, the Jets are in a position right now that they need points. Doesn't matter how you get those points. If you have to get goals off of guys' heads, if you have to, bank it off of 4 different guys, I don't care. Get the win. So, an impressive performance in the sense that they fought through that horrible second period. Mm-hmm. You know, Brian Little gets that goal in the third period. He's been a guy that's been excellent since returning from injury. I thought Dustin Byfuglien had one of his better games, you know, in the last couple weeks. So, yeah, sure. I mean, are there still causes for concern, Drew? Yes, absolutely. special teams have to be better. They're still taking some dumb penalties. But right now, you know, entering that game, you'd lost four in a row. You know, you get a win. You know, the guys were at the skills competition yesterday, you know, a little bit more loose. Hopefully they can keep it going against Colorado, but they absolutely have to tighten it up. They're still not being good enough in the second period. And, you know, the special teams, as we've said for, what, 5 years now, have to be better.
Yeah, it's amazing that they can be still continue to have the same conversation about the special teams.
You opened up that game and you thought, okay, the Jets are coming up with the right amount of jump. And then quickly it became, I think, 18-9 shots in favor after the first period for in favor of Florida. And Florida obviously had the greater chances. Of course, the Jets were, you know, got that goal with 11 seconds to go in the first period by Dustin Byfuglien. So that kind of gave them a little bit of momentum, but you know they weren't really able to sustain that into the second. And you know the Panthers obviously had the three power play goals, and it was funny because at the game I wrote, you know, I can't ever recall a game where a player's taken three penalties and on all three of those opportunities, you know, he was scored. The team was, he was, while he was in the penalty box, was scored against. And apparently,
Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, it was Rick Tocchet in 92 was the last time that had happened. So,
thanks,
I mean, obviously,
TSN research with Owen. That was a good email to get. Yeah.
No, that was good. It was interesting because, like, again, it's just such a rarity to see something like that actually happen. And, you know, obviously it's happened previously, but, you know, not for quite some time. So, overall, it wasn't a great game. I mean, we talked to the players after, and they all acknowledged that, you know, they were slow in the first and even to the second. They thought they played a better third period, which, you know, they did.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously Brian Little's goal was so clutch. But the overtime was good. Both teams had good chances. You know, obviously Jacob Trouba hit the post. Either team could have won it. I mean, a couple of bounces here or there, which is, you know, standard for hockey. And interestingly enough, Matthew Perreault, I asked him after the game, I said, did you already have that move picked out? And he said, yeah, you know, that's my go-to move. And he goes, no, if you check if you check video, I've actually used it before. So I did check video. And he used it, coincidentally, against the Ottawa Senators in the sixth round to win the game for the Jets in 2014. So he has used that move in the shootout before.
How did you find that?
You know, I'm a pretty good searcher, Drew.
Well, I mean, I'm impressed. Like, the amount of Googling, or like, you have to go back and find, like, guess Jets shootout games in the last few years, in the last 3 years.
Oh, Drew, your searching skills are weak.
Oh, they are weak.
They're weak. I guess that's your methodology. But no, I was able to find it. It didn't take me that long.
Okay.
No, I found it, and it was just interesting because it was literally the exact same move to win the game in the sixth round. So I thought it was an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, Drew, next thing you're going to tell us, you're still using Netscape Navigator.
I have a BlackBerry in my right hand right over here. So would you put anything past me
about
using Netscape? I'm using that AOL log. You know, dial up. Got 14.4, kbps.
You're that guy who's really excited when he gets a new AOL package in the mail.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of good music on LimeWire these days.
You know, you mentioned the start to the Jets, and I thought the Jets, to be perfectly honest, were going to come out with way more jump in that game. They'd had the rest, and God help us if we talk about the schedule and rest again, but they had the rest. I thought that they would have been able to jump out and really take the game to the Florida Panthers.
Well, hold on. I mean, the Jets in the first couple minutes, Dave,
right, yeah.
Nikolai Ehlers had a good chance there early on. And you got to give the Florida Panthers credit for the way they played in that first period. They put 19 shots on Connor Hellebuyck. But
and that's
right,
what
though.
I'm saying is concerning
right.
from a Jets fan,
sure.
is that you're the Panthers, well, a team that are disarrayed.
And sure, you could blame the fact that they had a couple of days off, maybe. So just a slow start. But they have to be better tomorrow afternoon against Colorado. They just have to be. And, you know, you can't rely on necessarily the third period and the shootout to bail you out, right? So, absolutely, we talked about how important it is for this team to play the full 60 minutes. Not just one good period or two good periods, three good periods, right? Mm-hmm. And that's been probably the biggest problem for the Jets this year. So, you know, sometimes those afternoon games, you know, they start off a little slower, you know, just because they're different than evening games. We've seen that many times at the MTS Center. So, absolutely, I think the Jets need a better start. And Dave said, you know, that they got the goal from Buff towards the end of the first period, but the majority of that first period was controlled by the Florida Panthers. Whether you want to look at the possession numbers, the team Corsi was heavily in favor of Florida. I think it was close to 70%. So Florida really had a good first period, but give the Jets credit again. They had a strong third period. You know, Dave mentions Matthew Perreault. He hasn't scored that many goals this year. So for a guy like Matthew Perreault, I think that means a lot that he scores in the shootout. So, again, hopefully they can continue it here against Colorado because, as we've talked about, they need the wins. They need to get points against Colorado, and then they need to go into Vancouver and get more points because, you know, that four-game losing streak set them back a little bit.
Never mind the five-game losing streak before that.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, you gave up three power play goals, so, I mean, it requires the team to be more disciplined, obviously. But, you know, at the same time, you didn't give up any five-on-five goals, which is big. And you kept – and I thought Connor Hellebuyck actually had a pretty strong game. And again, as he said, he faced a lot of rubber in that first period. He kept it out. So, you know, that's important. You need him to be playing well. And fine, realistically, Drew, I'm with you. I don't want to talk about the schedule anymore or use that as an excuse or allow it to be used as an excuse. But the fact is that now the anomaly to the schedule, you know, taking those days off is somewhat over. And now, you know, they're going to be dealing with, you know – Coach Maurice is going to have to kind of nuance it because he's got, you know, today he obviously they didn't skate yesterday. They're going to have a practice today at 11 o'clock at the Iceplex, and then they go into an afternoon game, and then they have an unusual quirk.
Yeah.
You know, I think the first time we've ever seen this, playing two games in a foreign city,
back to back.
So, you know, but again, they're going to have lots of practice time. So really, all the things that they didn't get a chance to do, especially with, again, remember, a younger team, and you're relying on these younger players in these roles for PK, for PP. You know, if you can't start to fix these things, then this is when there's a, quote, real problem. I'm not saying there already isn't, but I'm saying if you can't improve upon them, now that you have the time to actually practice them and supposedly make them better, that's when you're really running into an issue.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about the special teams coming up next segment because it continues to be an absolute abomination. I mean, I don't know what year. I've said that probably in year 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, going on and on and on. It's crazy how it continues to be a problem. But when you give up three shorthanded goals like we talked about in that second period there against the team that had the worst power play in the entire NHL entering that game, I mean, that's... It's hard to believe that that's just scheme. I mean, is your scheme that bad? I mean, I don't know. And I'm not expecting you guys to necessarily be able to answer that question. But
well, I don't think anybody can answer that question right now, Drew, because certainly the Jets coaching staff has been searching for that answer for a long time now. And, you know, Jamie Compan was brought in and, you know, he has a good track record in the NHL with special teams, and the special teams have not been better. And how many times do we have to say this? They have to be better. Mm-hmm. In order, if the Jets want to be a playoff team this year, the special teams have to be better. I think as it stands now, if the PK and the power play don't continue to improve,
or don't start to improve,
yeah. I should say, then this team isn't going to make the playoffs because a young team that's a team right now that's struggling, I think they need those special teams because it's losing them games this year.
Well, with all due respect, yeah, they get the win yesterday, or on Thursday. But, I mean, the Florida Panthers, if you just looked at it, if you watched that game and never actually saw any goals go into the net, you would have said the Florida Panthers outplayed the Winnipeg Jets. And that, to me, is what's the most concerning part of it, they still looked listless.
And if you kill off one of those penalties, then Florida doesn't go ahead, and then it's a tie game, and then, you know, you get the winning goal, maybe, you know, on your power play.
The fact that they just still looked listless. They looked listless like they did on the road trip in Calgary and Edmonton. They looked apathetic at some parts during the game, and I'm sure they weren't, but then why couldn't they get their legs? Why didn't they have their legs after having all this time off and everything else? That, to me, is what's still the most concerning part, is that you have, you know, the 3 days off, you come home, you're on home ice, it's a must-win game for you. And I know that's hyperbole, but it truly is a must-win game at this point in the season, given how many bad losing streaks you've had. And they still looked as if they didn't understand that. And that, to me, is what's most concerning.
I mean, we got to remember, we're not exactly talking about a Florida Panthers team that's the worst team in the East. And sure, they've been struggling, but it's not, again, you're dealing with a team that, if you look, they're fairly even with where the Jets are in the standings, and the East has been a good, you know, they've it's not like, again, you're not playing a team that you're going to walk all over.
No.
You know, and the Panthers had just played the previous night. Their coach had read them the riot act
Tuesday
against the Minnesota Wild. They got beat badly. So it wasn't like you were dealing with a Florida Panthers team that was going to come in here and lay down for the Jets. The Florida Panthers had something to prove. And, you know, the truth is, let's not forget, everybody's talking about the Florida Panthers and somewhat maligning the Florida Panthers, mostly the ownership and the executive structure there. But the fact is that, everybody in that organization somewhat has their back against the wall right now because they're trying – because it's like all everyone against us right now. And so the fact is – I'm not surprised by the effort we saw from the Florida Panthers because they know how much is on them right now. So, I mean, to be honest with you, Drew, I'm not surprised at anything that we saw on Thursday night.
By the way, Dave, Pearl Jam Riot Act is a great album.
Let's go to break. When we return, we're going to talk more about the Jets special teams, see if we can try and solve an ongoing problem. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The slot here. We'll get it for Bjugstad. He pushed it out in front. Bouncing puck. They score. And plays it near side here for Riley Smith. Comes off the wall and a shot going score. Far side now for Mulgan. Down low. He put it there out in front for a shot. Stop. Rebound. They score. Vincent Trocheck off the slap shot by Ekblad that I think hit the post. And then it's just a putback. And it's the third power play goal of the night for Florida. They lead it 3-2.
The worst power play in the league entering Thursday night's game after they were through with the Winnipeg Jets and their penalty kill. No longer the worst in the league, up to 24th in the league, tied, coincidentally enough, with the Winnipeg Jets. That, of course, was from Thursday night, the Florida Panthers scoring 3 power play goals on 3 second period power play opportunities, all with Toby Enstrom in the penalty box. Sort of a bad sequence of events for Toby Enstrom, a guy who really doesn't take very many penalties in the course of a season. He's usually, low down when it comes to penalty minutes. Had a bad night on Thursday night. The Panthers were able to capitalize. The Jets' penalty kill also had a bad night on Thursday night, and the Jets' power play certainly hasn't been any more impressive. We'll get to that in a second. Should say this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So that was one of the worst special teams performances you're going to see from an NHL team on Thursday night. To give up 3 straight power play goals to the worst power play team in the league, it's hard to sugarcoat that as much more than an abject failure of the Jets special teams.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, Drew? 5 years ago, we had Jeremy Weiss on the show of Weiss Tech Hockey.
I remember.
And we broke down the Jets' penalty kill, and we broke down the power play. Now, 5 years ago, guys, the team has changed drastically in those 5 years. But, since that year, not much has changed as far as the results go. And we've seen the Jets' power play have varying degrees of success here. But certainly the power play and penalty kill has not been good enough this year. And I would say last segment, I think it needs to be better if the Jets want to be a playoff team this year, because I think it's hurting them in games, Drew. And what's a bigger concern, the penalty kill or the power play right now? I think they're both a concern for me. I think they both have to be better. And when I look at the penalty kill, Dave, and 2 nights ago against the Florida Panthers, I just didn't think they were aggressive enough. I thought they were sitting back too much. I think Florida had too much room out there. Mm-hmm. And, when you look at who was in the box, a lot of times Tobias Enstrom is on the penalty kill. Another guy who I think the Jets missed big time on the PK is Tyler Myers. Tyler Myers is a guy that's played on the PK for the Jets the last couple of years. He's that big body, blocks a lot of shots, moves forwards out of the front of the net.
Yeah, big long stick, so it keeps people at bay.
Right, and so I think they miss him a lot. But I think we're talking about, is it a little bit of confidence? Is this team just not confident on special teams? Perhaps. Is it schemes? Well, I mean, the Jets coaching staff, that's what they're paid for. Mm-hmm. That's what they have to figure that out if they need to, switch their strategies. And, I mentioned Jeremy Weiss. When we had him on, we kind of went over the triangle against the umbrella or the standard box kind of penalty kill or, weak side forward and, the net front coverage and all that. I mean, you could break it down to every single player on the ice and look at schemes. And I mean, I just don't think the Jets have been aggressive enough on the PK. You look at some other teams and I just think they do a better job than the Jets have done. So I think that's part of it. I don't think it's that simple. But certainly when you look at the personnel that they have out there, Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, these guys are good penalty killers. I said that to Dave last game. A guy like Brandon Tanev, I think, does a lot of good things on the PK. But you look at who was out there for all three goals. Josh Morrissey was struggling. Is it because he's a smaller guy? Absolutely not. I mean, Josh Morrissey's a great defensive defenseman. I don't think you can say that, you know, him being out there is the reason why the penalty kill struggled on Thursday night. But, I mean, it's a systematic thing here, Drew. I think, you know, the penalty kill and the power play, we've said it again and again. I don't know what the cure is. I really don't. And, you know, it has to be figured out, though. We're 32 games into the season and 33 games into the season, sorry, and it's costing them games, and I think they got to figure it out. If it is strategy, Dave, they got to figure out what strategy they should use to make the special teams better, both on the PK and the power play.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that it used to be a dearth of talent was the reason why that they weren't having success. But you can't use that excuse anymore, right? You've got Nikolai Ehlers, you've got Patrick Laine, just specifically on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in addition to Mark Scheifele, who hasn't looked like Mark Scheifele since he's returned from injury, in my opinion. Blake Wheeler, I mean, you know, and then the back end, you've got Byfuglien, Ekstrom.
You're looking at the power play issues right now. Yeah.
But I'm saying even, like, you know, you have talent. Like, look, he uses Wheeler on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Blake Wheeler is a big body, has skill. Can, you know, lug that puck out of there, knows what to do with it. You know, I mean, you're not using plugs. It's not the same way. I mean, a lot of people don't like the use of Chris Thorburn on the penalty kill, but the fact is the coaching staff, for whatever reason, that's their vision. They choose to use Chris Thorburn on the penalty kill. You know, I mean, the fact is, as he's right, we're not paid to figure out why, you know, to figure out how they're to solve it. It's the coaching staff, and they haven't come to that conclusion, which is unusual, because the fact is, again, like I said, you used to be able to say in years 1, 2, and 3, okay, well, you know, you don't really have the talent on the power play, or you don't have, but you can't use that excuse anymore. You do have the talent, so you should be able to improve in these areas, and you consistently do not.
I think the penalty kill will get better, because I don't think it truly is as bad as it was on Thursday night. What's more problematic to me is the power play, because I don't know how many games in a row it's now been, but the power play doesn't even look like it has the ability to get set up.
Well, and, you know, we talked about that on the pregame show with Ken Wiebe, and, you know, you look at Patrick Laine,
mm-hmm.
he's got 9 power play goals, Drew. Half of his goals are on the power play. You know, he hasn't scored a power play goal in a while now, but you look at, again, you know, Dave makes a good point. You know, 4 years ago, you could say, well, the Jets don't have enough talent on the power play. But you look at Nikolai Ehlers, who got the first star, and he didn't have any points in that game. Patrick Laine, Dustin Byfuglien, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele. I mean, on and on. Matthew Perreault is a guy that's had success
on
the power
play. Little.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is the setup. And, you know, we watch this team game in and game out, and I have noticed that with the exception of Nikolai Ehlers, I think their zone entries have been a problem this year. But it is the setup. And, you know, if you're going to revolve the power play around Patrick Laine, similar to what the Washington Capitals do with Ovechkin or Tampa did with Stamkos when he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make sure that you have the right player feeding him the puck. And I think right now it's Nikolai Ehlers, left shot, you know, feeding Laine the puck because he's on his offside. So I think that's their best option right now. But, you know, you could go over the schemes all you want. You can go through 30 different looks. And, you know, I think that the Jets, you know, maybe they have to just start, you know, banging and crashing in, you know, the old-fashioned way and just doing whatever they have to do, putting Adam Lowry or Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net. I don't know, but certainly they can't blame a lack of skill, because
no.
Laine's got a great shot. Nikolai Ehlers has got a great shot. Scheifele and Wheeler are good setup guys.
Yeah,
they've
sure.
also got pretty good shots. So, I mean, you have a lot of snipers on this team.
And that's, you're absolutely right, Ez. And that's what's so befuddling to me is that, you know, they try and enter the zone on the power play, and some teams enter the zone, you know, easily on the power play. They skate it in, they stop, they set it up, they're established on a threatening power play. The Jets seem to be just dumping it in, and then it's just getting sent right back out. I mean, the power play just has looked so unimaginative, and I don't necessarily want them to be the Harlem Globetrotters out there, because I don't. I don't think that's effective, really. But you need a little bit more creativity in your zone entries, because as far as I can tell, they're just dumping the puck in, trying to go chase after it, which is so, you know, backwards in this day and age with regard to possession and everything, and it's just being sent down the ice by the penalty killers. They make it easy on their opponents right now, because you're right, the Jets should have a fearsome power play with the talent you were just able to rattle off, with guys who had the great combinations of playmakers and shooters. And instead, it's, you know, it's what's the power play now? It's down to 25th in the league at 14.8%. I mean, this isn't a Jets team that is tremendous, hasn't been scoring a ton lately. So if you can't get it on the power play, I mean, there's real troubles there. I mean, I don't understand what the strategy is with regard to zone entries on the power play and what the strategy is with regards to the penalty kill. And that's the problem, is I'm just sitting there befuddled watching it.
Yeah, right. And we can debate, you know, which is more important, the PK and the power play. The reality is they're both important.
Sure.
And when the games start to get tighter, and as the season goes on, the games do get tighter and less goals are scored. I mean, they're both important. So, I mean, do you have to have a top five power play and a top five PK, you know, to make the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup? No. But for a team like the Jets, where it's been a problem year after year after year, you hope that it's going to improve here. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think on Thursday night, I mean, that was maybe the worst display of special teams we've ever seen from this Jets team. No power play goals, and Florida scored on every single one of their power play opportunities.
It was not a good performance on Thursday night on the special teams. The Jets look to rebound when they face the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow afternoon. Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press, he joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he covers the Winnipeg Jets. We welcome back to the program our very good friend, Jeff Hamilton. Jeffrey, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Good morning to you guys. How are we doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, young man?
Pretty good.
That's good. Jeff, we appreciate you joining us, of course, talking about the Jets here. Right now, between now and New Year's Eve, you got six games left in this 2016 portion of the 16-17 schedule. I'm of the opinion that the Jets need to get 10, you know, a minimum of 10 points out of the next 12 that are available to them before New Year's to really still be in the thick of things, to still be in the running for the playoffs come 2017. Tell me why I'm wrong with that opinion.
Tell you why you're wrong? I don't think you're wrong. I think if you're going to get back into the thick, as you say, and even in the conversation, you have to start putting together victories. And you can look at the six before New Year's, but even if you want to break it down further, the three before Christmas, particularly the Colorado game on Sunday and then those games in Vancouver next week, you got to win all of those. You can't drop those. So that right there is your 6 points. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's a little bit challenging now to play, you know, Chicago Blackhawks, and Columbus has found their stride, obviously, and then you have the Islanders. So you need to come up with big victories in at least two out of those three games. So I can't say you're wrong. I think 10 points would be good for this team, but it would also be, like you said, needed for them to get back into any conversation before teams are thinking either they're a good team or it's certainly a playoff team.
Jeff, before we had you on, we were breaking down the Winnipeg Jets special teams, and on Thursday night against Florida, they were pretty bad, and you know they gave up those three power play goals to the Florida Panthers after Toby Enstrom took those three penalties. To you, what's a bigger concern, the power play or the penalty kill?
The PK, for sure. I mean, I say that pretty aggressively off the bat because, you know, obviously if your PK is bad, you're allowing goals. I mean, power play needs to get better, clearly. I think it's hard to say they've made strides in that category just given their statistics, but they have a lineup that I think is at least workable. Right now, it's just the PK just seems like a mess, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. And, you know, when you can give teams like Florida, who came in to Winnipeg, you know, last week with the worst power play in the league, and score three goals against you on that, I mean, you know you got problems. Paul Maurice admitted as much. But at the same time, the power play is also this confidence booster. You know, if you can get a power play going, sometimes a team that is struggling on 5-on-5 and just struggling with their game in general, like the Jets are, and being so inconsistent in the style in which they play each night, the power play can be that difference. It can be that that confidence boost. It can kind of almost be that swagger for a club that knows if this line's clicking, that, you know, they'll always get a chance to win. So I say PK only because it's costing the Jets so much right now. But you really could look at either or, and that is a tough question because both, although I do believe the power play is has an edge on the PK, both severely need work and improvement.
Jeff, last night at the skills competition, we saw Nick Petan, Joel Armia, and Sean Mathias back in the back wearing Jets uniforms, which means that they're probably fairly close. We've heard from Coach Maurice saying that he expects probably the Vancouver series, possibly, or maybe sometime around Christmas. What would you do if those three guys are coming back in? Obviously, they're going to filter in at different times, but what happens to this Jets lineup when those three guys come back?
I think there's your third line. I don't think anyone has done enough to argue that these guys shouldn't get in right away, and Paul Maurice has hinted as much. And as we saw the success with Lowry and Mathias and Armia, you know, I think you have to go right back to them, at least see what you got out of them, because I think those guys are itching to get back in the lineup, get some energy, and those guys are ready to go. You know, as far as the fourth line, I think that's where you get some interesting questions. I think, you know, Andrew Kopp has played well enough to kind of stay up. Obviously, the opportunity, this team really likes Chris Thorburn in the lineup. I don't know. I think it puts him in a situation where, you know, he's not playing every game. And I just think he gives you a lot of opportunities with guys like, you know, Marco Dano, who's impressed to a certain point and has played well. Brandon Tanev, I don't think, deserves to sit out either. So, you know, with these guys, healthy bodies coming back, I think you have an interesting lineup with your fourth. And I think when they do come back, you will see them as the third line, the Mathias, Armia, and Lowry, and you will see a juggle up, I believe, in that fourth line, maybe just to keep guys fresh and to keep guys involved. Because at this point right now, I don't think anyone can really predict definitively who will be that fourth line. But I think you can say with pretty fair confidence that third line will go back once Mathias and Armia come back.
Jeff Hamilton, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeff covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeff, you know, Tyler Myers is currently out of the lineup with the world's longest day-to-day injury. How concerned are you, you know, right now from a Winnipeg Jets perspective about the long-term health of Tyler Myers?
Well, isn't that the biggest question? I mean, people are talking about, do you think we're going to see Tyler Myers this season? And although that seems kind of ridiculous, considering, like you said, he's been given the day-to-day status, you know, since his injury, and I think it's been, 15, 16 games he's missed, and at least in this stretch. And you have to think pretty concerning from a Jets fan's perspective, just because, this, you know, Paul Maurice said, you know, not too long ago that his health is, or his injury is kind of, or his recovery, rather, has plateaued to the point where they're not comfortable putting him back on the ice. I mean, that, to me, is, until he gets back on the ice and until he's skating around and getting that strength, because, I mean, we all know it's either his hip or something's wrong, lower body, you know, it's going to be affecting his skating, and then you've got to get him into contact. So right now, I mean, it looks like he's at least weeks away. This defense certainly could use him. It'd be interesting where he would fit in, you know, at this point with Jacob Trouba and Tobi Enstrom playing on that second line. Does he fall into the third line? Regardless of where he falls in, him coming back to the lineup would be a big boost. And at this point, that, you know, it's anyone's guess when he's coming back, but you know it's going to be, it's not going to be for a few weeks, and that's not good news for the Jets any way you want to look at it.
Jeff, we saw his skills on display last night at the MTS Center. Nikolaj Ehlers picked up the first star against the Florida Panthers. Didn't have any goals or assists. He had 6 shots on net, and he had several more that missed the net. But do you think with the Jets and, you know, the fact that they've lost 4 of their last 5 games, with how well Nikolaj Ehlers is playing, is that almost getting unnoticed a little bit, the amount of skill that we're seeing on a nightly basis from Nikolaj Ehlers?
Yeah, you know, I think in the media we do a pretty good job of bringing that out, just because he has been so standoutish in a lot of games, particularly that Panthers game. Like you said, he went pointless, and he was the first star in that game. It would have been kind of a little storybook there if he would have finished in the shootout. But yeah, you know, he's been snake bitten, but he's also been one of the best Jets. And I remember talking to him last week just about, if he even felt like he was in a drought, or if he felt like he was frustrated, because he would show frustration from not scoring on breakaways, right? I mean, he had a couple of games there where, you know, he had clear-cut passes in the net and just couldn't bury. Either got robbed by a nice save or hit the post. And I asked him, do you ever really feel like you were in a drought? And he said no. I mean, he's not even really frustrated with his game. In fact, I think he thinks he's playing his best hockey since he's been in the NHL. And I think we can all agree that, you know, at times he's really has dictated the play. And he's also been setting guys up. I mean, he's got the assists. I think he's fallen out of the top 10 in assists over the last week or so. But he's still hovering around that group. And he's playing some, like you said, he's playing some of his best hockey. And I think Nikolaj Ehlers is only going to get better. And that's good news for Jets, because this is a guy who, you know, he's not a big guy, but, you know, we've all seen him score goals. Now we're seeing him set up goals and kind of slow down the game, if you will. And that's a promising sign, and certainly some good stuff from Nick this year.
Jeff, the big talk this year was seeing Connor Hellebuck assume that number one goalie position from Andre Pavlik and Michael Hutchinson, who were kind of platooning. And obviously Hellebuck was up last year for the injuries. What do you think? Do you think Connor Hellebuck is ready to assume that mantle? Because from what we've seen so far, he hasn't necessarily seized it.
Yeah, mentally, I think he's fine. I mean, performance-wise, I just, you know, I mean, he's not stealing games. And can you look towards a few weak goals here and there? Absolutely. Can you look at some defensive lapses? For sure. That have attributed to kind of his overall numbers this year. But, you know, I think he's got a long leash. I don't think he's concerned whether he's going to lose that job, whether it's this year, if he gets the full slate down the stretch. But he's certainly the goalie of the future. It's been a sore point for this team this year, the goaltending. I don't think it's been to where they want it to be. I mean, it's the great debate right now whether you want to consider his output, you know, better than Andre Pavlik's in the past. And I know fans don't like that comparison, but you know, with the results that they're getting now, it's not all that much better. I think you get a better goaltender as far as, you know, he's young, he's upcoming, his ceiling is obviously certainly higher than the guy who's been moved to the AHL now, but it is concerning in the sense that you think he would take over a little bit. You think he'd even take over some games, and he has played well. I mean, Connor Hellebuck has certainly played well in a number of games, but I don't think I just don't think he's taken over a game really this year, and certainly can't be said for the same thing for Michael Hutchinson. And it's an interesting battle. I think fans had high expectations when, you know, for years they were screaming to get Andre Pavlik out of the crease, and I think once they expected that Connor Hellebuck would take over, it would be this somewhat of a savior. I always figured it would take a slow process. I think he's moving in the right direction, and certainly mentally he's strong enough. He doesn't let these games really bother him. So I think it's promising, but I don't know. I think they ride out, unless he can take over games, unless he can start really showing that he can, you know, handle great performance after great performance, I just don't see the number one being handed to him to the degree that I think many people are expected from him this year.
Jeff, you had a great piece in the Winnipeg Free Press yesterday on Jaromir Jagr, who was obviously in town recently with the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. Is Jagr ever going to retire?
I don't know. You know, like, he's joked about playing till 50. It's interesting, right? Like, I saw him in Florida, and he doesn't, you know, like, he was such a big presence in the locker room, you know, obviously a big guy. And I don't want to say he looks frail now, but he doesn't look invincible. He has this aura of tiredness to him. And maybe that's part to do with the fact that the Panthers are struggling, but I don't think he's slowing down. I mean, at this point, he's defying logic and being able to not only, you know, play with, but excel in a league that's constantly, you know, being perceived as a young man's game, as I wrote about. And, you know, it's amazing that he's going to be the second leading scorer all time. And it's only a matter of time before he passes Mark Messier. I think it's 3 points he needs. I'm not sure what he got in the game yesterday. But I know Florida, I think, got 3 goals. I don't know how many he connect on. Anyways, he's close to it. And it's just really an amazing feat. And, you know, if you've read anything about him of late in the last few years, I mean, this guy's a workout machine. He's got the trainer, you know, in his back pocket, to the point where, you know, if he wants to work out at 10:30 p.m. at night, you know, at the arena, the trainer will meet him there, drop everything he's doing. If he wants to be doing, you know, sprints in the hotel room or hotel halls, you know, he's up and he's ready to go. So this guy is dedicated to playing forever. You know, it'll be interesting to see when we start seeing him slow down, but I don't think you've seen many signs of that recently. And it's going to be an exciting journey to catch up with him and finally see where he determines where he ends. So could be 50. Who knows?
Yeah, Jeff, he didn't get any points last night, but as you said, he's going to pass Mark Messier in the next week or so. And I think he's going to probably have to play 15 more years before he passes Gretzky's record, but...
How crazy is that? No one's going to touch that. It seems almost impossible. So,
Jeff Hamilton covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jeff, we appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get on with a hopefully enjoyable Saturday.
Hey, guys. Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and the Avs and the Jets and the Canucks, previewing the next couple games. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
So they moved into non-contact status, and they'll get through a few days of that, and then we'll slowly move them into controlled contact, probably away from practice time, and then into full contact. And once they hit that, it's kind of how they feel the next day. And so once they're good to go, they'll be back in, but it's day-to-day at this point.
Do you think there's a chance for the home games before the Vancouver back-to-back?
I think we're more likely looking at the Vancouver series, and even then, I'm not sure.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice giving an update on the health of Sean Mathias and Joel Armia, both getting close to returning to the Jets lineup, having missed a number of games, both with, I believe, lower body injuries, ankle sprains, and
LBI.
Whatnot. LBI, the old LBI. Getting close to coming back into the lineup, though, both of those players, as the Jets, as he says, likely... or more likely that it'll happen when they're in Vancouver rather than tomorrow afternoon when they're playing the Colorado Avalanche at home. Should mention that this segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Perhaps you have a Joel Armia jersey that you want to get customized. Keener Jerseys can do that for you. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, Keener Jerseys can do that for you as well. Just go online, visit them at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Keener Jerseys, great jerseys at Keener Jerseys.
Absolutely, and I actually ran into Keener at Boston Pizza City Place during the post-game show.
Ah, you were doing pre and post with Rick on Thursday night.
Yeah, we had an awesome time. Always loved doing the pre and post with Rick, and had a good chat with Keener. And we were talking about getting together over the holidays for a nice rum and eggnog. So, make sure you get those jerseys because, the days are... ticking off, Drew, before Christmas here.
Sure.
So, you got to get in there and get your jersey done, and they can, turn that jersey around quickly.
What did you buy me for Christmas? Hanukkah, which they coincide this year.
You bought me
the absence of your presence.
I actually bought you absinthe.
Oh, absinthe. Okay, that's good too. And you're just talking about the Jets lineup now that they're close to getting healthier.
By the way, Drew, I don't need to get you presents. Our friendship
is a present. Yes,
even though
exactly.
you still have me blocked on Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's good for both of us to just live with that for a little while.
Dave would never block me.
Never.
Armia and Mathias.
Yep.
Patan also getting close as well.
Yeah, it's funny, Drew. I'll just cut you off there for a second. To me, Joel Armia was showing us a lot, Dave, before he went down with an injury. And I think this was the year for him, and it still can be the year for him to really prove that he can be a top nine forward for the Winnipeg Jets. And I really like his game. But you know what I think is the most interesting is the amount of internal competition you're going to continue to see on this Jets team. Because as far as I'm concerned, Marco Dano's played really well since being called up. Andrew Kopp, even though, the goals and assists haven't really come for Andrew Kopp. I think he's played really well on that fourth line. But Nick Petan is a guy that's interesting to me. We talked about it during the second segment. And Nick Petan, it looks like Dave might not be back for these two games against Vancouver, but he should be back relatively soon. He's a guy that I think could really help the power play. And we saw that. And Paul Maurice, when he was in the lineup, Petan was put out there on the power play unit. Mm-hmm. And, he's a left shot. He's got really good playmaking ability. I think he could really help this power play. So I'm interested to see where these guys slot in. You assume that Sean Mathias is probably going to slot in on that third line. Maybe they slot him in on the fourth line, but most likely third or fourth line. And then same thing goes for Joel Armia, right? So Both of these guys have speed. Both of these guys can play the penalty kill. So, you know, the Jets are really going to get a boost here, Dave, when these guys come back from the lineup. As far as Tyler Myers goes, looks like Tyler Myers might not be back until 2017 in January.
If it's
his back. That's the problem.
You can't, obviously you can't rely, the Jets don't know when they can expect Tyler Myers back in the lineup. I mean,
and it's something that's taken longer to recover.
Well, sure, it's been day to day now for, you know, like you said, you know, 2 months or however long it's been. It's been, so I mean,
what, 21 games, I think?
Something like that, yeah. I mean,
21 games. He missed four initially.
Sorry, 21 games because he played 11 games so far this year.
And then that Friday night in Colorado got hurt.
Yeah.
And then again
in the Colorado game 2 weeks later, he got hurt and missed the next 17. Now,
is your mic off there for a second? By the way,
I'm not sure. I don't know.
No, we're all a little puzzled. That actually is our slogan here on the show, is we're all a little puzzled. But
and Coach Murray said it the other day when he gave an update on Nick Petan, and he said, Joel Armia is closer than the other two, so you're going to get Joel Armia back first. And then most likely he said Sean Mathias and Nick Petan are tied together in terms of when they're going to be back. So, I mean, again, it does present, I mean, it's a question I just asked Jeff Hamilton, and even, you know, just writing it out myself, and I mean, I look at the lineups constantly. You're trying to figure out, where do these guys slot back in? Who do you pull from the lineup to put in? And again, Jeff's not wrong. Nobody has seized the spot. You know, guys have played well. But, I mean, when you're looking at the Jets in terms of goals, which ultimately, I mean, like, that's what this team needs, right? You need goal scoring.
Yeah.
And, like, realistically, after, I mean, Andrew Kopp has 3, Marco Dano has 3, Chris Thorburn has 3, Perreault has 2, you know what I mean? Brandon Tanev has 2, Sean Mathias has 2. Now, these guys, don't get me wrong. Some of these guys, they offer intangibles, but at the end of the day, you still need goal production. And you can't rely solely on your top two lines to be your only goal producers.
And that's what they're doing. I mean, no. You look at, there's such a disparity that, you know, the top 5 scorers on the Jets each have more than 20 points.
Right.
You know, starting with Scheifele, all the way, you know, at 28, down to Byfuglien at 21. Then there's nobody after those 5 that are in double digits in points. Everybody's in single digits. You know, Lowry and Dano each have 9 points on the season.
Right, of course. And again, in an ideal world, you have Lowry in that bottom role, and, you know, that's kind of where you, you know, see him. And then you have guys in that third line filling in, or even if you have Lowry on the third line if you want, because that's, you know, like I said, Maurice loves him up in the middle in that spot. So, you know, with potentially the line mates he had at the beginning of the year, we get to see what those guys were, because as he alluded to earlier, you know, we're seeing from Joel Armia some sizzle to his game, and again, even defensively. And that's the thing. Sometimes these guys, what they bring, they don't put the puck in the net so much. I mean, that's what we're seeing with Marco Dano, and that's what we're seeing with Brandon Tanev, is that defensively these guys can add a lot to a team. So they do have value that is not just solely based on whether they can put a puck in the net. But at the same time, what I'm getting at is the Jets can't rely on just the top two lines to get goals.
No, they need to get depth scoring, and that's always been a problem. And this was supposed to be the year where they would have the most forward depth, and they do have the most forward depth that they've had in the last 5 years. Hasn't necessarily translated into an overwhelming amount of offense, an overwhelming amount of points, and whether that's due to the injuries or whatever it might be. So they're now getting to the point where you're almost back to complete health. And not only complete health, but almost healthier than you expected to be. Because remember, Andrew Kopp didn't start the year with the Jets. You know, Nick Petan didn't start the year with the Winnipeg Jets. So now you have more players, more options than you really ever expected to. Because, you know, how can you send Kopp or Petan back to the Moose over, you know, over some of the other performers that you've seen? Nobody has stood out. So it is a very difficult decision in that you have too many guys for too many spots, yet nobody has seized the job.
Yeah, and Sean Mathias is an interesting one to me, Dave, because the Jets signed Sean Mathias in the offseason to a 2-year contract, and he's only played 10 games this year. He's a guy that a couple years ago with Vancouver, you know, scored 18 goals. So, I mean, this is a guy that can score, and he can provide that quote-unquote secondary offense. So, you know, it might be a little bit ironic that, you know, he returns to the lineup against the Vancouver Canucks, a team he played for a couple of years ago. But
if it ends up happening.
Yeah, and right, Drew, we don't know for sure if he's going to return Tuesday or Thursday of next week, but certainly he can provide that offensive boost. So I think, you know, heading into the Christmas break, you know, it'll be nice to get some bodies back into the lineup. And, you know, as far as Tyler Myers goes, hopefully it's early January, you know, at the earliest. But, you know, the Jets are getting healthier, and really that's a really good thing, because the Jets have lost 100-plus man games to injury this year. So, you know, that's important for this team.
They certainly have had They certainly have had a lot of injuries. And, you know, it's now a question, though. I mean, I think it's a difficult one for Paul Maurice and the coaching staff to figure out, you know, how do they deploy these forwards? I mean, I think they would have loved to have seen somebody seize this opportunity while these injured guys were out of the lineup, seize the opportunity and say, you know, this is my job. They're going to have to wrestle it from my hands. Nobody's done that. So do they immediately go back in? Mathias and Armia, I assume they go back into playing, you know, into a role similar to what they were playing before their injury, because nobody has taken their job from them, from my perspective.
Well, I think if you're Charlie Huddy or Jamie Compon, I think even though Paul Maurice loves to use the line blender, I think you might have to get him a new one for Christmas.
Well, it's because it's been broken so many times because he's been using it too much. The motor's out on it.
Yeah.
I think there's no question you're putting veteran guys back into the lineup. Now, not that Armia is a veteran, but you're putting Mathias back in immediately. I mean, again, he's just I mean,
you signed him to a 2-year deal.
You signed him to a 2-year deal, yeah. And the fact is he was sidelined by injury. I mean, what are you going to do? The guy can't do anything about it, so he'll get back in. He'll get used to playing with some of the guys that he was playing with before.
Right, Dave, and, you know, if you have to make a decision involving Andrew Kopp or Alexander Burmistrov, if you have to place him on waivers, if you have to move him, if you have to send Andrew Kopp or Marco Dano down to the Manitoba Moose, those decisions will be made at the appropriate time, right? But, I mean, certainly someone's got to go down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, of course. And again, like the interesting one to me is Nick Petan, because again, Nick Petan thrives when he plays in the top six role. I mean, I guess top nine would be fine, but I think especially because if the Jets had,
he's got to play with talented players. If you're playing Nick Petan with guys who don't have a similar offensive talent, you're wasting it.
Well, he's a vision guy. I mean, you see it. You saw it when he set up Blake Wheeler for that goal.
Prior to the injury.
I mean, he's got great vision. He's got great hands, but he needs to be playing with complementary players. And that's just, it's just the reality. So, I mean, if you're not going to play Nick Petan in that sort of role where he can thrive with other players who have a similar talent, then I could see Nick Petan going down to the Moose simply because, you know, he's just wasted on a fourth line role. It just makes no sense to play Nick Petan in that sort of position. Again, you could put him in the third line if you are going to stock it with a talented, you know, you're going to put Perot there, you're going to put someone else, you know, there with him.
Mathias.
Someone can score, he can facilitate, you know. But if you're not, then it's a problem because, again, like I said, you just can't waste someone like Nick Petan in a quote, checking role.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Drew Spivak joins us. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche. They're in town tomorrow to face the Jets. We'll talk about that game next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio as well. And if you're looking for the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news, that's available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Drew Spivak. Drew covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. He's also the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. Drew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me again. Hope you guys are doing well.
Doing very well, Drew. Thanks very much for joining us. Another game, another loss for the Colorado Avalanche last night. They drop a 3-1 decision at home to the Florida Panthers, 2-7-1 in their last 10. You know, we'll talk about Joe Sakic's comments coming up, but when is enough enough for this, or the continued struggles? This is what I believe now year 3 of the Colorado Avalanche being one of the worst teams in the NHL.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know at what point you start to figure out that whatever this team is doing just flat out isn't working. We're now in, you know, our third coach in what, the last 5 years, our second coach now in the last, you know, 2.5 years, and this team just does not seem to be getting better. I don't know if necessarily you could say they're getting worse. They're just stuck in the mud right now, and nothing's changing, nothing's working. Whatever they're trying to do isn't working. They changed the system, that hasn't worked, and this team is just a team right now that they can't put the puck in the net, and when you can't score in the NHL, you're not going to have a lot of success. And when your goaltending and your defense has struggled the way that this team has, you know, over the last couple years, it's no wonder that this team is at the bottom of the standings. And so if you're management, your Joe Sakic, and these guys, you look at it and say, well, what do we do to make this team better and improve it going forward? And I don't know if there's an easy answer to it, because there's a lot of different kind of components to this team to kind of look at and say, all right, do we blow this thing up? Do we, you know, wait until next season when we have more salary cap space and try and, you know, plug some holes that way, maybe try and fix the depth of this team? I don't know what the answer is right now. There's a lot of, I think, fighting amongst the Avalanche fans here in Denver, trying to figure out, okay, is it, do we blow up the core? Do we trade one of the top guys in Matt Duchene or Nathan MacKinnon or Gabriel Landeskog, or is it the depth guys that are a problem? So I think we're just kind of at a loss right now out here trying to figure out what exactly is the problem and what's the best way to fix it.
Drew, you know what? We have a bit of a sketchy connection, so we're going to call you back in a couple seconds and see if that improves the line. How's that sound? Okay, we're going to get Drew back on the line coming up in a second, so make sure we have a solid connection with him so you can continue the rest of the interview with hearing his insights.
I listened to a lot of EDM, and it sounded like Drew was auto-tuning himself a little bit there.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go to a rave later on. You know, why else do you think I'm dancing with these light sticks in the studio here and, you know, sucking on a soother?
That's what
happens at raves, right?
Yeah, none of us have actually been to a rave.
If I went to a rave, somebody would be very concerned.
Yeah, even though I think that you'd probably enjoy listening to music with a soother in your mouth. Yeah,
more like a sucker is really what I'm looking for than a soother, but anyways.
No, yeah, so we'll get Drew back on the line here, guys. But, you know, the Colorado Avalanche right now, they're the worst team in the NHL, and I remember we talked about it last week. You know, Joe Sakic's comments about the core group of this team, and I don't think the core group of this team is necessarily the problem. Certainly, Dave, you look at the talent in that core group, Nathan MacKinnon, Matt Duchene. By the way, Gabriel Landeskog is having an awful year, and I realized he's missed 10 games, but, you know, he's got 19 points. It's not good enough. And
he's the captain of that team.
He's the captain of the team, and, you know, is there leadership issues in this group? I think there is.
Well, we had this, you know, for lack of a better word, fight on last week's show.
Right.
Where, you know, they're not going to improve unless they trade a core member of their team.
Well, they're also not going to improve the way the defense is constructed right now. And I've said that time and time again.
To get a defenseman, you have to trade a core member of the team. I think we have Drew back. Hopefully we have a better connection. Drew, are you there again?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. Hopefully you guys can hear me much better now.
All right, Drew, you've never sounded better.
Yes, crystal clear. So hopefully that continues. Ezzy, your call, Ezzy.
Well, no, I was going to ask you about the goaltending, Drew, and Calvin Pickard has actually started the last couple of games. We know how much Semyon Varlamov has struggled this year. Is there a chance here for Calvin Pickard to get the majority of the starts for the rest of the season?
Yeah, guys, I think there is, actually. I mean, you know, I know one of the issues right now with it is Semyon Varlamov is battling a little bit of a groin injury. He's missed the last two games, but he hasn't really played up to a high standard lately. And I think that you're starting to see Jared Bednar lean a little bit towards Calvin Pickard to just kind of see what the kid's got. And I think for the most part this year, Pickard's actually played pretty well. He's been the better of the two goaltenders this season. And, you know, I mean, I know if you look statistically at their numbers, you know, they're about the same. I think they both actually have about a .904 save percentage this year. But I think overall, Picker's been the better player. And, you know, when you watch Varlamov, it's been kind of the same story we've seen from him over the last couple of years, that he can be really streaky. He'll go, you know, 3, 4, or 5 games and play really, really well, and then he'll follow that up with 3 or 4 games of, you know, not so good play. And, you know, it's one of those weird things where it's hard to pin it all on him, because the defense in front of him has been so bad for the last 3 years, and the way this team is constructed defensively, it doesn't, you know, help out their goaltender a whole heck of a lot. But, you know, this team has a decision to make, and it comes up next year with the expansion draft, because you're going to have to unprotect one of these goaltenders, and you would think that the most likely candidate to be unprotected in the expansion draft is going to be Semyon Varlamov, based on the fact that he's making, you know, almost $6 million next year, and Pickard, you're getting him for about $1 million. So I think Pickard's going to have a chance here over the next, you know, few weeks to really earn the job and show that he should be the guy that sticks around next year.
Drew, there's a lot of talk about Jerome Iginla and whether he finishes his career in Denver, and a lot of speculation right now that he won't, and in fact he'll be traded. So I guess the question is, do you think that Jerome Iginla finishes this season with the Colorado Avalanche?
I do, and it's only because, you know, I know there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of the talk around the league that that a team that a Stanley Cup contender is going to want a guy like that, a veteran leader, a guy who's been around the block and looking to go out and win a Stanley Cup. But you look at Jerome McGinley's play this year, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what can he contribute to a team on the ice? We know what he does in the locker room and off the ice, but what can he bring on the ice? And on the ice, the fact of the matter is he's just not a very good player anymore. It's not that he's actively a bad player. He's not actively killing this Avalanche team night in and night out, but he's not the same player as he was once before. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on those legs, and you see it time and you know, time again, and with guys like this that are older. And I don't know exactly what he would bring to a team other than just kind of the veteran leadership. So I do think at the end of the day, he probably finishes out here. But, you know, if he doesn't, hey, good for him. Have the chance to go and hopefully wake up somewhere else, because we know it's not going to happen here in Colorado this year.
Drew Spivak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew is the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered podcast. He covers the Avs for Denver Sports 760 as well. It was about 2 weeks ago, Drew, that Joe Sakic sat down with Terry Fry of the Denver Post and gave a vote of confidence for this core, the core group, the core six players of the Colorado Avalanche, guys who, you know, are well-known in the hockey world: Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, you know, Matt Duchene, you know, Semyon Varlamov, Eric Johnson, to name but a few of the quote-unquote core group. Since then, the Avalanche have gone 2-5 and certainly don't look any better than they did before that vote of confidence. What's it going to take for Sakic to come to the conclusion that he needs to change this lineup around, that, you know, the current construct of the Colorado Avalanche is simply not good enough? On paper, they have a tremendous amount of talent, but it hasn't translated on ice. You know, what's it going to take for Sakic to realize that right now what he's got is the Edmonton Oilers pre-Connor McDavid?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you look at it at this point, maybe the only way he wants to move one of these core guys that you talked about is if he gets blown away by a trade offer. But, you know, I can't look around the league and see anybody, because, you know, what we've talked about with this Avalanche team, what they need over the last years is defense. They need help on the blue line 100%. I mean, Eric Johnson is their best defender, and, you know, he's on the shelf for the next 6 to 8 weeks with a broken leg. And beyond him, there's not a whole heck of a lot back. I know Tyson Barrie people talk about, but Tyson Barrie's been, frankly, a disaster this year. He's been terrible after getting that new contract this last season. So you look and say, all right, this team needs help on the blue line. Well, teams around the league that have top-quality defensemen don't want to give them up, because there's not a ton of top-quality defensemen around the NHL. And we saw what the haul was just to get to get Adam Larson out of New Jersey. It, you know, cost the Oilers Taylor Hall. So I think that's going to be the only point where they're going to look at it and say, yeah, if you blow us away with a deal, we'll consider moving one of these guys. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right decision. I don't know if you can look at these core guys and say that they're worth really keeping around. I mean, Matt Duchene's in his, what, eighth year now, and he's still – you kind of know who Matt Duchene is at this point. You know that he's not really going to turn anything else. I mean, he scored 30 goals for the first time last year. He's got 12 goals this year. He's been an okay player, but he hasn't really wowed anybody. You look at Nathan MacKinnon, I think he's been a little bit of a disappointment this year. He's got 21 points, but he's only got 8 goals. He's really kind of turned it on over the last week or two, been one of the few guys that's played well. But some of these other guys, you know, Gabe Landeskog, Tyson Barrie, these guys just haven't really stepped up and made that other leap. So it makes you wonder, when is enough enough? And I don't know if Sakic is going to be willing to pull the trigger on these guys unless he gets blown away. And I just can't see another team coming in here and blowing the Avalanche away with a deal. So they're kind of at a stalemate right now, it seems like to me.
Yeah, Drew, unfortunately, I have to ask you about another guy who's had a disappointing season, Carl Soderberg. The Avalanche a couple of years ago signed Carl Soderberg to a 5-year deal. He's making $4.75 million a year for 3 more years after this year. He's only got 9 points this year. You know, you watch this team on a nightly basis. What's been wrong with Carl Soderberg this year?
It's hard to say. It's hard to pinpoint it for sure, because he was really good last year, and I think he was kind of a guy that nobody really, I think, appreciated how good he actually was for this team last year coming in with that new deal. But he's just been invisible this year. He's turning the puck over a lot. He's He's not as aggressive, I think, as he was last season. I mean, he's been playing on the fourth line for the last couple of weeks, and that's not something you would expect to see for a guy that was pretty much the primary, you know, number two center for this team last season. It's just, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what's been going wrong with him for this year, but, you know, it's one of those things where he's one of those disappointing guys. You look at a guy like him, a guy like, you know, Jerome Iginla, Francois Beauchemin, some of these guys that are making a lot of money. You know, you got $15 million tied up in those three guys that I just talked about right there, and you've gotten almost zero production from any of those guys, and that kind of explains why this team's been so bad. And, you know, I look at the expansion draft, and I'm kind of starting to look forward to all those things and how this is going to play out with the Avalanche, and I thought he was going to be one of those guys that was surely going to be protecting the expansion draft, and now I'm not so sure based on the results this year. If he continues to play the way he has and being stuck down on that fourth line, I don't know what they're going to have, what they do with him. If they even plan on keeping him, bringing him back next year. So, yeah, he's definitely been one of the bigger disappointments for this team.
Drew, since 95, 96 to 2005, 06, they missed the playoffs once, but they won the Stanley Cup twice, and they were always a threat. Then in the next 10 years, they've only made the playoffs three times. What's the fan base? I guess loyalty. What's the fan base like right now with Colorado? Because they can't be happy with a team that was considered a perennial contender and is now kind of a perennial no-show.
Yeah, it's a ton of frustration around. I think that's the biggest word you could say. It's frustration. It's a lot of just trying to figure out, okay, how do we improve this thing? I mean, you've looked at the attendance over the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's been bad. I know. Over the last homestand, when they had the six-game homestand where they went 0-4 or 0-5-1 or whatever it was, they played poorly on that last homestand. There were nights where there were maybe 7,000-8,000 people in the building. The announced attendance was about 12,000, but they only had 7,000 or 8,000 people in the building, and that's kind of unheard of for a franchise like this that had, you know, what, 400 straight sellouts or whatever it was when they first moved here. And, you know, this is an organization and a fan base that's competing for popularity around Denver, because anybody that follows any sort of Denver sports knows that the life around here revolves around the Denver Broncos and everybody else, whether it be, you know, the Rockies in baseball, the Nuggets in basketball, and the Avalanche, of course, in hockey, that unless you're good, unless you're competing for, you know, playoffs and championships every season, that you're kind of an afterthought around here. Nobody really looks at you and talks about you in the media as much, and nobody cares as much unless you're winning like the Broncos do every year. And with the struggles that this team has had, or that this team has had over the last couple of years, they're struggling to even just get any sort of attention around here at all. So I think the Avalanche fans that are around here and that are diehards and really truly care about this team, they look at it right now and just say, you know, what do we do at this point? It's pure frustration. And they look at some of their favorite players like Matt Duchene and Nathan McKinnon and Gabe Landeskog and say, well, we don't want to trade these guys, but what else can we do to make it better? So it's a lot of just kind of frustration, I guess. Like I said, is the best word to describe what's going on around here right now.
Drew, we'll let you go on this last question. This is Jared Bednar's rookie season as an NHL head coach. Certainly had an impressive pedigree in the AHL before he was hired very late in the offseason when Patrick Waugh went home. You know, obviously the team's record has been lousy and the team's performance on the ice has been lousy. How would you evaluate the job that Bednar's doing behind the bench, though?
Yeah, crazy enough, I actually think he's done overall a pretty decent job. I mean, you look at some of like the underlying numbers of this team, and one of the, you know, a lot of the struggles they've had has been possession. They haven't been a very good possession team over the last couple of years. Now, I know you look at it right now and say, well, they're, you know, near the bottom of the league in possession again, but that's come over the last, you know, two or three weeks, really since Eric Johnson got hurt is when they started taking that dip. They've been a better possession team. They're not sitting there and they're not getting completely outshot night in and night out like they have been over the last couple of years. So I think you can see that his system and his structure, I think, is good. I just look at it now and say, I don't know if the players are necessarily in place, if this roster is built to kind of play the type of system that he wants to play, if this team is good enough to get the puck out of the zone defensively. That's been one of the biggest struggles they've had. I mean, they cannot get out of their own end cleanly. They'll get out, you know, cross the blue line, they get in the neutral zone, and then they turn the puck over. They can't do it cleanly on a consistent basis. But I think if you look at overall the way Jared Bednar's run this team, and they got off to a pretty decent start with it this year, considering they had a really challenging schedule as well. So, you know, I look at Bednar and I think that he's got an opportunity to be a pretty decent coach in this league once he gets a better roster suited towards what he wants to do. So I think overall he's done a decent job, and I know that sounds maybe a little bit crazy when you look at where this team is at when the bottom of the standings and, you know, what, 4-10-1 at home this year. But I think overall, I think he's done a better job than Patrick Waugh has as a head coach.
By the way, Drew, have you come down from your high of the Cubbies winning the World Series?
Not even close, guys. I'm enjoying it, especially now in the offseason. The Cubs are doing big things in the offseason. I'm still just jacked up about this team as well.
Well, there you go. You got this, at least, the Abs might be struggling, but you always have your Cubbies you can look back on now and hold in warm thoughts in your heart.
Absolutely. That'll never change.
There you go. Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for Denver Sports 760. He's also the host of the Avalanche Unfiltered Hockey Podcast. Drew, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. It's been a pleasure as always. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Drew. Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, Hanukkah Harry is going to make a visit here and talk about your Winnipeg Jets holiday wish list. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
And it goes back in behind the Jets net. And a couple players falling on top of it, including Ehlers. He gets back up, maintains possession, and shot it into his own goal. Ehlers shot it into his own goal. Michael Hutchinson was not expecting that. And the Avalanche win in overtime. Oh, my.
Last time the Jets and the Avs played back on November the 11th, Nikolaj Ehlers snipes it. Well, not really snipes it. It's more dribbles it past Michael Hutchinson. And the Jets lose in Colorado by, I believe it was a 3-2 margin, if I recall correctly, in overtime. That was the last time the Jets and the Avs played. They, of course, do battle tomorrow afternoon at MTS Center. A game you can hear live on TSN 1290 and watch it live on TSN 3. You know, just thinking about it, we might have to get the Elias Sports Bureau on the phone. Has there ever been a team that has given up two own goals as the game-winning goals in one season?
Well, I don't know, Drew, about that, but it's funny because when you were saying that, I was thinking to myself, what are the odds that that's not the most recent own goal?
Game-winning goal.
Game-winning goal for this team. Yeah, but yeah, of course, that was, you know, Nikolaj, he looked to the sky when he did that. Yeah. You know, he looked, you could just see he felt terrible, as did Patrick Laine when he scored against the Jets in Edmonton. But still, you know, this is a team that you need to pump. You need to be able to just beat Colorado. Colorado's reeling right now.
Yeah.
And the Jets, you know, they're practicing in about half an hour at the Iceplex, and you have to think that they're going to be ready for battle. You know, they've, like I said, they're coming off the win, which is, again, whatever you want to say, it's 2 points. Maurice gave them, obviously they didn't have a skate yesterday because they had the skills competition last night, so they end up having a practice today. They won't have a game day skate tomorrow, of course, because it's an afternoon game, but mm-hmm. You know, I have to think this team is going to be ready to face the Colorado Avalanche, and while they're not going to take any team lightly, especially because of the position they're in, they're not in a position to take any team lightly, you have to think that this team has, you know, circled this game as an opportunity just to pump the Avalanche and really just kind of give yourself that momentum you need to go into Vancouver with those, quote, good feelings.
I mean, you have your next three games are against bad hockey teams. I mean, they are. You can sugarcoat it any way you want it, but, I mean, the Vancouver Canucks are playing better hockey, but they're not what you would describe as a good hockey team. They beat the Tampa Bay Lightning last night. And the Colorado Avalanche are a worse hockey team for sure. So the Jets have to be looking at this opportunity tomorrow at home as a way to build on, like you said, Dave, a way to build on the victory over the Florida Panthers. And then Tuesday, Thursday, you go into Vancouver to play the Canucks. And those are also very winnable hockey games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about this, you know, all throughout the week, going back to Wednesday's NHL This Week show, Drew.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you lose four games in a row, you put yourself in a situation where you have to go on a winning streak, right? Mm-hmm. 500 hockey is not going to cut it for the rest of the mm-hmm. season, right, guys? We said the Jets are going to have to win 60% of their games, most likely, in order to make the playoffs. We don't know exactly what that playoff line is. You got to look short-term here, Drew, and short-term is the next three games. So tomorrow afternoon, you're facing a struggling Avalanche team. I would argue that they're probably the worst team in the league right now.
Well, statistically, they are. They've got the fewest number of points in the league.
Yeah,
and they've scored the fewest number of goals in the league as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. They don't score a lot of goals, and they have trouble keeping the puck out of their net. So, you know, we might see Calvin Pickard tomorrow against the Colorado Avalanche because he's played the last couple of games, and Semyon Varlamov has struggled in his recent start. So, you know, it's possible we'll see him. But certainly the Avalanche right now are top-heavy. We talked about it. Nathan McKinnon, you know, Matt Duchene. If those guys aren't scoring after that, you know, guys like Carl Soderberg and Gabriel Landeskog, Jerome McGinley, you can go up and down the list. They've struggled, and you know, sure, they've gotten a boost from you know, the rookie there, Mikko Rantanen, but just they're not a very good team defensively or in any position right now. So the Jets have a great opportunity to get the 2 points tomorrow, and then they obviously are going to play a Canucks team that's also in disarray right now. So absolutely, the next three games, can they win all three of these games, Drew, heading into the Christmas break? Absolutely. Now, have the Jets gone into games this season against teams they should beat and they haven't beaten? Sure, that's why you play the games. And even though there are teams, you know, weaker than the Jets in the standings right now, on any given day, and it applies to any sport. I mean, that's why, you know, they say on any given Sunday in the NFL, unless you're the Cleveland Browns, you can probably win the game, right?
Touché.
Just ask the Dallas Cowboys with the New York Giants, right? So, you know, the Jets right now, they have to win these three games, I think. They're must-win games. You have to go into the Christmas break on a good winning streak because it's going to be tough right now. You look at, you know, the Central Division, and you can say, Drew, that the Stars and the Predators have been struggling, but the Hawks and Blues are way ahead of the Jets in the standings right now.
Yeah, the Hawks, Blues, and Wild, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, those and the Wild, sorry. So there's three teams right now in the Central that have kind of, you know, ran away from the pack, and the Jets are going to be fighting the Stars and the Predators for that last playoff position. So they need points. I don't know how many times I can say it. It sounds like I've been a broken record here, but these are big games.
Well, the Jets currently are five games under 500 when it comes to a winning percentage. They've played 33 games. They've won 14 of them.
Yeah.
You know, when December ends, they will have played 39 games. You need to have won either 18 or 19, preferably 19 games out of the 39 you've played. If you win all six from now until the end of December, you're going to be over 500 as a winning percentage. That's the benchmark. That's the benchmark, and this is not a benchmark that the Jets and not a benchmark that Paul Maurice, as an NHL head coach, frequently reaches. If you want to be a playoff team, you got to win half of your games. Not win 35 of your games and then get a lot of points in overtime. That's not a good way to go about it. Win half your games, you're going to be a playoff team more likely than not. Jets haven't done that this year, and now they have a great opportunity from now until the end of December to do that, given that it is, I mean, of your next six games, two of them are against what I would describe as high-quality hockey teams. That's the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets. Other than that, you got the Avs, they're struggling. You got the Islanders, they're struggling, and you got the Canucks, they're struggling. Very winnable, very doable schedule for the Jets from now until New Year's Eve.
Yeah, Drew, and last weekend on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you asked Dave and I if we were pessimists or if we were optimists. And, you know, I'd like to think I'm an optimist.
A cockeyed young optimist.
Yeah. Yes. And
Billy Mumfries.
I mean, if you look at, you know, the Jets, you mentioned that, you know, the Jets' schedule heading into the Christmas break is an easier one. And then, you know, you come back and you've got Chicago, a tough team, obviously. But the Jets have had success against the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. They shut them out earlier in the season. Then, sure, Columbus is a tough game at home. But then you've got the Islanders, who are also a mess, coming in on New Year's Eve. But I look at, you know, this is why I think if you're a Jets fan, you should be optimistic, I guess, if you are an optimist. And that's because who predicted the Columbus Blue Jackets would have five losses at this point? Who predicted that the Philadelphia Flyers would win 10 games in a row, right? So, I mean, the Jets can go on a streak here. Calgary Flames are another team that went on a winning streak, and they really climbed up the standing. So, I mean, the Jets, it's 33 games into the season, but that means that there are 49 games left in the season. So there's lots of hockey to be played here.
Yeah.
And, you know, these next few games are important. And, you know, the games after that, the next, you know, 10 games are very important. So just because you pick up a win against the Avalanche doesn't mean you have to go. Doesn't mean you can't go into Vancouver and leave points on the board. So
the Jets have no margin of error.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Their margin of error is gone.
Yep.
You need, as I said to Jeff Hamilton, you got 12 points that are up for grabs between now and 2017. you need at least 10 or 11 of those 12 points. That's how you've already lost your margin of error this season, when it was the 5-game losing streak and the 4-game losing streak before that. No more margin of error for this Winnipeg Jets team, and starts tomorrow afternoon against the Colorado Avalanche. Let's set the break. Now we'll talk about Hanukkah Harry and what he's going to bring for Winnipeg Jets fans under the menorah and or Christmas tree, depending on which side of those two coins you subscribe to.
Who brought the dreidel?
I don't have a dreidel. Dave, you have a dreidel?
I do not.
Okay, well, there's no dreidel, but we still got Hanukkah Harry. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.